20 Questions by Spurious. Fandom Stargate Atlantis. Relationship Rodney McKay and John Shepherd. Rating Mature. Read by It Started With Alex. Cover art by Cassiope 25. 20. You know I'm gay, right? John says one night, in between The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, interrupting Rodney's frankly horrifyingly detailed recounting of his first experience seeing Princess Leia in the gold bikini. Rodney stops mid-sentence, blinks 3 times, and then squints at John. Really? John breathes out a reflexive laugh. Yeah, really. Huh, Rodney says, like John's a pile of rubble, giving off an anomalous energy reading. You don't seem... John gives him a look, and he cuts himself off. There's a momentary thoughtful pause, and then... So I guess the gold bikini didn't do much for you? Not especially, John says, although it was one of the things he trained himself into being able to express a passable level of interest over, just to blend in. Huh, says Rodney again. Okay, then, what about... I mean... He tilts his head, drums his fingers against the side of his laptop. Luke or Han? John bites his lip. He walked right the hell into this one. Han, he says. Luke's too clean cut. Rodney nods, humming like he's giving this very serious thought. Yeah, he says finally. I'd go for Han too, if I had to choose. 19. Wait a minute, Rodney says a few weeks later, while John's setting up the chessboard. Weren't you married? John's not sure which piece of honesty he regrets, having mentioned an ex-wife loudly and publicly to establish his straight cred, or having privately demolished said cred to Rodney. Yeah. John focuses on setting each piece in the exact centre of its square. I was. So, was it like... Rodney makes a vague gesture. One of those things where you didn't realise until later, or... No, John shakes his head. I always knew. Right, Rodney says, slow and thoughtful. Then... why? There are so many ways to answer that. John shrugs. I'm in the Air Force, Rodney. What the hell else was I supposed to do? John can practically hear Rodney's brain whirring with questions, theories, observations. He keeps his head down, careful focus on the chessboard. Did she know? John winces, sucks in air, thinking of just how much of an asshole the whole thing makes him out to be. Not until she asked for the divorce. Ah, Rodney says, and John can tell he's making an effort, however small, to be tactful. How did it all work? John sighs, runs a hand through his hair, considers trying to shut down the whole topic. It's Rodney, though, Rodney who won't let something go until he understands it. Rodney who John, for some reason, wants to understand him. I liked her, you know, John says. And she kind of got me, I guess. Thought I could make it work. Right, Rodney says slowly. But in terms of the physical aspect, I mean... John grimaces. We took it slow. He swallows hard, plunges ahead. Kept the lights out a lot. Let her think I was nervous. And John had been nervous. Terrified he'd be caught out, unable to perform. But, I don't know, I mean, someone touching you, someone you care about, that just, it feels good, I guess. I suppose I can understand that, Rodney says. And when John looks up, he's got his head tilted, bright eyes flicking to and fro across John's face. Rodney, John says, his voice coming out tighter than he wants it to. Can we just play chess, please? Rodney blinks, like he'd just been woken up, and nods. Oh, yes, of course. 18. The next question comes while they're watching Ocean's 11 sprawled on Rodney's bed with a laptop between them. Other than the invasive querying, absolutely nothing seems to have changed between them after John's revelation, something he's absurdly thankful for, even if he'd never say so. About halfway through the movie, Rodney tilts onto his side and gives John an assessing look before saying, "Okay, Brad Pitt or George Clooney?" "In this movie?" John asks, gesturing to the screen. "Pitt." And John's feeling comfortable, so he shrugs, says, "You ever notice he's eating something in just about every scene?" Rodney, a handful of popcorn on its way to his mouth, makes a noise of confusion. "What's that got to do with, you know?" John watches Rodney's cheeks bulge as he chews, shrugs again. "I dunno," he says. "Guess I'd just like a guy with a healthy appetite." He waits until Rodney's swallowed his popcorn before putting on his most lecherous possible grin and continuing, "And a big mouth." And that gets the exact reaction he hoped for. Rodney sputters, shoves his shoulders, shouts, "Oh my God!" and doesn't notice how very close John had come to truth-telling. They settle back in, and about 5 minutes go by before Rodney hums, tilts his head. "I'd have to say Clooney myself. I mean, if I had to choose." John looks over, and Rodney seems to be giving this some really serious thought. He watches, morbidly fascinated, as Rodney stares carefully at the laptop screen. "He's got that classically handsome thing going on," Rodney says eventually, shrugging. "Guess maybe for you it'd be too samey." "Too what?" John's lost the thread of both the movie and this conversation now, but Rodney just rolls his eyes like it's obvious. "Well, I don't know what it's like for gay men, of course, but I would think you might prefer someone not quite so similar." He gestures arcanely at the screen and then at John. "Like, two guys with the same sort of movie star good looks might feel a little strange together." Point made, Rodney goes back to stuffing his face with popcorn, leaving John to consider and discard responses to that statement for the next half hour of the movie, suddenly very aware of the heat of Rodney's body next to him on the bed. 17. Rodney's next question comes during a movie night too, though this time the movie's over and they're just lying there together on Rodney's bed, talking like they're at a high school sleepover. Something John realises neither of them probably really experienced when they were in high school, both of them just off enough in their own particular ways, and it must be that sort of wistful nostalgia for something not even real that lets John be honest when Rodney turns over onto his back and asks, "When was your first?" "I was 19, John says. I had to get away from home before I could do it, you know?" Rodney hums, soft in the quiet, and John continues, "I went into the city while I was at Stanford, found one of the bars there." He has to take a breath to steady himself, his heart hammering in his chest like he's back there, finally going for it after weeks, months, years of talking himself out of it. "God, I was so scared." 19, Rodney says, thoughtful. And Rodney's so goddamn smart, and they're about the same age, so John knows that Rodney knows exactly what he was afraid of. "It was worth it," John says, "because it was, even at the time when he was terrified of a million unsayable things. It was..." He laughs, shakes his head. "I mean, it was over so fast. But the guy was real nice about it. Took it slow. Talked me through giving him head." "My first time was over fast too," Rodney offers wryly. "Yeah?" John prompts, putting an arm behind his head, thankful that he's off the hook for further explanation. "I was 16, so I was already at university, but my parents insisted that I come home for the summers and get a part-time job," Rodney says, sounding annoyed, the way he always does when he thinks something's a waste of his time. "I guess they thought working for minimum wage at a grocery store would help me learn to socialise normally or something, but let me tell you, that ship had well and truly sailed by the time they started trying to fix it. John snorts because, yeah, sounds like way too little, way too late. So you met a girl at your part-time job? Yeah, Rodney says, Madeline or Maxine or something. She worked the register and asked me to tutor her in algebra, which I tried to do, seriously, for about 6 weeks. And then one day her parents weren't home and, well... The bed shakes a little as Rodney shrugs. I think she had this idea that I was some sophisticated college guy, which should have tipped me off that she was too stupid even for algebra. But my performance, well, quickly disabused her of that notion. Should have asked her to tutor you, John says, grinning, and Rodney shoves him, and they both dissolve into a sort of weird, sleepy laughter, just the two of them, alone, in the quiet. 16. A few weeks later, during an incredibly routine mission, John and Rodney end up stuck in a mineshaft. It's not the worst situation, not even the worst situation they've been in this month, since neither of them is injured, and Taylor's already en route to the gate to get help lifting them out. But Rodney starts to get twitchy after about 5 minutes of sitting quietly. How long do we have to sit here in this cave? Rodney complains, shuddering on the word. Eh, you know what they say, John quips, feeling oddly at ease in the knowledge that someone's coming for them. Only difference between a cave and a grave is one's got an entrance. Rodney actually squeaks next to him, and okay, maybe his claims of claustrophobia weren't quite as overblown as John had thought. Why the hell would you say that? Rodney's hissing, as though speaking any louder might bring down the walls around them. What the fuck is wrong with you? John licks his lips, shrugs. He feels like kind of a jerk, but on the other hand, winding Rodney up further will probably pass the time better for both of them than John giving him a genuine apology would. You've read my personnel file, he drawls. Air Force's got the whole list. Just pick one. Rodney huffs, shifting against the wall. John can feel the heat radiating from Rodney's side, where he's moved just the slightest bit closer. I don't remember seeing complete and utter dickhead on the list I read, but maybe that's on the unredacted version. Base shrink told me I had sociopathic tendencies once, John offers. And let me guess, Rodney says dryly, they gave you a gold star and a bigger gun. You're awful squeamish for a guy who's made nuclear warheads, John says, just to hear Rodney's indignant little sniff. But yeah, pretty much. Right, Rodney says, full of that particular Canadian superiority, even though he's worked for the US military nearly as long as John has. Because the only thing dangerous or disqualifying about you is who you might love. John shivers, wants to say, don't say the word love to me when we're alone and sharing air underground, McKay. But instead, he tips his head back, closes his eyes. The inside of his mouth feels gritty from the dust he swallowed when they fell in. Yeah, well, I don't know how much love enters into it. 15. They're off-world, breaking in the new team at a banquet held by one of Taylor's people's trading partners. Representatives from a dozen different planets are flitting around the halls, whining and dining, when Rodney voices what's not so much a question as a suggestion. You know, Rodney says, from the corner where he and John were banished after making one obscure Earth cultural reference too many to an alien dignitary. We're off-world, probably staying overnight. He trails off, giving John a significant look. But when John responds with bafflement, he continues, I'm just saying, if you wanted to liaise with one of the locals, I mean. You're the only US military here, and the rest of us can be, well, discreet. Liaise, John repeats, just to have something to say. You know, Rodney says, and then makes a vaguely lewd hand gesture. I think that one guy over there was checking you out. John blinks, looks in the direction Rodney's very blatantly pointing. One of the delegates from a planet John can't remember the name of is leaning against the buffet table. He's got sandy fair hair that falls in loose waves over his shoulders, long slender limbs, dark eyes lined with kohl, and pouty full lips painted red. Okay, that guy is not my type, John says, reaching over Rodney to grab a roll. Really? Rodney says, speculative. He's so pretty, though. I don't go for pretty, John shrugs, ripping the roll in half. There's a plate of something like olive oil in the middle of the table, and he dips the bread in it, turning it over and examining it. I like guys with a little meat on their bones. Chewing slowly, John watches Rodney's eyes shift across the hall to Ronan, who's talking and eating with a weapons merchant who'd seem to know him by sight. So like... Rodney pauses, tilts his head. John swallows, deciding to put him out of his misery. No, not like Ronan. Rodney still looks puzzled, and John rolls his eyes. There's like a whole lot of ground to cover between Ronan and Twinks, McKay. Wait, what? Rodney says, eyes wide. Are there Twinkies here? 14. Once John explains to Rodney what a twink is, derailed by several emphatic laments over unduly teasing Rodney with the prospect of factory-produced pastry, Rodney becomes briefly fascinated by the different types of gay men there can be. Since John doesn't have the heart to tell Rodney that years of military service, combined with now living in another galaxy, means he doesn't exactly have his finger on the pulse of gay culture, he does the best he can, and Rodney's none the wiser anyway. In the midst of an oddly impassioned mess hall discussion about whether one of the new geologists is more of a daddy or a bear, John says, "Look, either way, I'm telling you, that guy would clean up at a gay bar." And Rodney tilts his head, goes thoughtful, before he says, "What about me? How would I do?" "What?" John asks, feeling startled and somehow caught out by the question. "Me," Rodney repeats, "is, well, sort of out-of-shape astrophysicist, an attractive type." "You're not out of shape," John says, too quickly, thinking of Rodney's thighs and ass as he climbs the gate room stairs, Rodney's broad shoulders and thick arms in those too tight science team T-shirts. "I'm going to remember you said that the next time you're yelling at me to run faster through some idyllic Pegasus hellscape," Rodney says, though he looks pleased. "That doesn't answer my question, though." John blows out a breath. "You'd do fine in a gay bar, Rodney." "Fine," Rodney repeats, mouth slanting over on one side. "Why do you even want to know?" John says. "You looking for a backup plan, once you've alienated every woman in two galaxies?" Rodney huffs, crosses his arms. "Just curious how I'd, well, perform on a different playing field, as it were." His face has that particular pinched look that means he's feeling insecure, and John is so incredibly weak because he shrugs, pushes some food around his plate and says, "Think you'd do pretty well, actually. I mean, come on, you've got to know you've got a great ass." Rodney's eyes go dinner plate wide, his cheeks flushing to a soft pink. "I do." Nervous, John fiddles with his fork, but Rodney seems entirely too delighted with this new information to consider asking why John had noticed. 13. "Oh, by the way," Rodney says once, when John's lacing up his boots, getting ready to head back to his room after movie night, "you haven't poked around the Atlantis file servers much, have you?" "Not much," John says, wondering if he's about to get impromptu tech support. Rodney nods. "Thought so." He goes to his desk, picking up a USB stick. "It's password protected, so you shouldn't have to worry about anyone finding it." Rodney gives him a crooked, self-satisfied smile, holding the drive out. John says, "what's on it?" "Gay porn," Rodney says, "like it's normal to randomly offer your buddy a flash drive full of dicks. I mean, it's not everything on the servers, I couldn't fit it all. There's quite a wide selection up there, actually, so I... you know, curated a little bit." John actually presses a hand to his ear. He couldn't possibly have heard what he thinks he just heard. "You watched it?" "Yes," Rodney says, impatient. "How else was I supposed to make my selections?" John reaches out, takes the drive from Rodney's outstretched hand, tries not to imagine Rodney bent over his laptop, scrolling carefully through gay porn and thinking of what John might like. "I tried to go for, well, a sort of assortment, if you will, though unfortunately what there was quite heavy on the, well, The Pretty Boys, which I know you said isn't quite to your taste, but I imagine, you know, that at some stage a dick is a dick, right? John swallows, feeling insane, and bites his tongue against the question he wants to ask. Did you get off watching it? Did you think about me? Why the fuck did you even think to do this, you freak? And says instead, Wow, thanks, Rodney. Rodney grins, nods to himself. Well, just, you know, let me know if you'd like anything different or, specific. He pauses, snaps his fingers. Oh, right, the password. And then he's pushing a post-it note into John's hand, covered with letters and numbers in Rodney's familiar, spiky handwriting. Just toss it out after you've memorized it. John nods, shoves both drive and post-it into his pocket, and walks out of the room in a daze. 12. John watches the porn, of course, because he's not one to look a proverbial gift horse in the mouth. He sets up on his bed, laptop next to him, shirt off, sweats loose, and starts flipping through the videos, already achingly hard from just imagining Rodney doing the same thing. There's a lot of blowjobs, which isn't really surprising. The POV blowjob, that staple of straight porn, probably felt familiar enough for Rodney to feel confident picking them out. There's a couple different fucking scenes, too, and, yeah, John sees what Rodney meant about the pretty boys. Almost every single guy is bleached and waxed to within an inch of his life. John's used to that, knows what the porn look is, but it still dampens his enjoyment a little, so he keeps scrolling, skipping around. Every file is labelled with an incomprehensible string of letters and numbers, and John wonders if that's how they were originally, or if Rodney invented some kind of cataloguing protocol, his very own Dewey Decimal System. John huffs out a laugh at that thought, skipping idly through a scene of some twink getting railed over a pool table. He's just thinking about touching himself when he realises he's already nearly scrolled through the whole drive. The final video file has a totally different set of numbers than the others, which John figures means it'll be something different from the rest of it, but he's still a little surprised when the file opens, and it's clearly something amateur, bad lighting and a messy bedroom, and two guys who look like just guys, exactly the way John likes. They're kissing, both of them naked already, barely even seeming conscious of the camera pointed at them. Oh yeah, John thinks, sliding a hand into his sweats. He tugs himself slow and lazy, watching the guys make out and grope each other. And he can't help thinking about Rodney. Rodney watching this, picking it out for him, thinking John would like it. He zones completely out of the video, the moans and slick sounds nothing but background noise, as he jacks himself faster, imagining watching with Rodney, imagines offering to give him a hand, imagines Rodney's stuttering, face going red but nodding, letting John slide a hand into his pants, nice and easy. John comes with a shout muffled into his pillow, the sounds of the two guys fucking in the background, the image of Rodney's face slack with pleasure in his mind's eye. The next morning in the mess, Rodney grins, asks, Well, were my selections sufficient? And John nearly chokes on his coffee. 11. John's worried things are going to be weird between them after the porn thing, but Rodney surprises him yet again by being bizarrely normal about it. John had been sure that, however confident Rodney had initially seemed, exposure to the actual realities of gay sex was going to be a bridge too far, would be the thing that made him pull away, start to see John differently. In fact, he doesn't even ask any questions until a couple of weeks later, when they're wandering through a lush forest on a new planet, team split in twos for recon. Okay, Rodney says with a long exhalation, like he's been working up to this. John braces for impact. I've been wondering about this since I went through all that porn, but, which, you know, way do you like? John knows exactly what the question is frankly surprised it's taken Rodney this long to ask it. But he's also not above having a little fun, so he hums, tilts his head. You're going to have to be more specific, buddy. Rodney gives him a sidelong look. Oh, come on, you know exactly what I'm talking about. John smirks, looking up at the trees. If you can't say it, I don't know if you're ready to know the answer. God, you're such an asshole, Rodney grumbles without heat. What's that about my asshole? John says, smirk splitting into a full-on grin. You are so immature, Rodney complains, and then his brain seems to catch up with the implication, and he blinks. Oh, so you like? I like getting fucked, yeah, John says, taking pity. Not only that, but yeah. Rodney hums, thoughtful again. Does it hurt? It can, John says, thinking of being fucked hard, stretched open without any prep, trapped under another body, nothing to do but take it. He nearly trips over a tree root. It's a good kind of hurt, though. A good kind of hurt, Rodney repeats, low and sceptical. That's so you know that? John shrugs, flashes Rodney another grin, and they keep on walking.
10. They're in the gaming room the next time Rodney asks him something, peering at John curiously over both of their monitors. It's long past midnight, probably past time they should have wrapped things up, but they've been sitting there trash-talking over snacks long enough that entropy's pulling them both down into their computer chairs, thick like molasses. Well, that's how John feels, until Rodney asks, with his usual mix of oddly innocent interest and dry academic detachment, "So, have you actually been with anyone since we got here?" John's heart starts pounding, sweat prickling at his hairline, his palms. If Rodney starts to wonder why John hasn't tried to date anyone since they came to Atlantis, if he realises what's going on here. Yeah, every now and then, John hedges, tipping his chair back. A couple of scientists, the one really friendly ambassador on that swampy planet, you know. You slept with the guy from Dagobah, Rodney sputters. Right, John says, that's the one. And my scientists, Rodney continues. I hope you're not distracting them from their work. John shifts so he can give Rodney a look over their monitors. I don't know what you think it is I do, but... He blows out a breath, shakes his head, collapses back into the chair. This is, at least, better than the alternative of Rodney putting two and two together regarding who John does spend all his time with. Well, excuse me for being concerned, but you're all... Rodney makes a complicated gesture that seems to encompass John's entire person. Well, you, and you're distracting enough for the women who'll never get their hands on you, so... I promise I'm not distracting your scientists, Rodney, John drawls. But I can stick to celibacy if you think it'd be better for productivity. No, I... Rodney pauses, and his voice is a little softer when he says, No, of course not. If John didn't know better, he might think Rodney's jealous, but he knows that's not a thread he should tug on, because that way fucking madness lies. 9. Okay, Rodney says, setting his lunch tray down with a clatter across from John, with that tone that says he's been having this conversation in his head already for about half an hour at least. Which of my scientists? Jesus, Rodney, John hisses, I can't tell you that. I know, Rodney whines, sounding miserable, but I mean, the Dagobah guy, and... He narrows his eyes, gives John a very long look, and finally shakes his head. I just can't stop thinking that you've got really bad taste in men, he says. John stuffs about half his sandwich into his mouth to keep himself from gesturing at Rodney and saying, Yeah, case in fucking point, buddy. That guy was cute in an offbeat kind of way, John says, once he's chewed and swallowed both his sandwich and his words. He made me laugh. Yes, I remember you two giggling through the diplomatic feast, Rodney says darkly. He'd been in a horrible mood the whole time they were on that planet, John recalls, constantly complaining about the mud and humidity. I slept with him one time, Rodney, John says, It's not like we're going steady.
Well, Rodney says, that's the thing. I mean, if you're looking for a one-night stand, wouldn't you?
He pauses, frowns.
I just can't imagine any of my scientists are, you know, in the same league.
Honestly, John says, with the number of people we've got here, I just need someone playing the same sport, all right?
Rodney's quiet for a moment, obviously running through personnel ratios and statistics in his head, and then he nods.
Well, yes, when you put it that way.
8. The governor of one of Atlantis's latest allies and trading partners is a laid-back, jovial man whose children are 20-something-year-old fraternal twins, male and female, both equally beautiful, both offered to John as a companion for the evening. John says, and damn it, he should be smoother about this kind of thing by now. Thanks so much for thinking of me, Governor, but I'm... John breaks off, trying to figure out how to say no without offending anyone. It turns out he doesn't need to, because Rodney is stepping up, taking John's arm in the same proprietary way he grabs at interesting ancient tech. Colonel Shepherd is spoken for, Rodney says, staring down the Governor and his children, chin tilted up. Taylor, bless her, picks up the thread immediately. Relational bonds are very strict among the Colonel's people, she explains. I'm sure you understand. Thanks, John says later, still trying to shake off the phantom sensation of Rodney's hand on his elbow, Rodney's heat radiating into his side. Rodney looks up from where he's washing his face in the basin at the corner of their room, shrugging.
Well, for whatever reason, these people seem to think you're quite a prize, so I figured I'd only go up in their estimation if they thought I was.
Rodney trails off, eyes darting to the huge bed in the centre of the room. Then he straightens his posture, squares his shoulders.
You're welcome.
Why didn't you? Rodney starts, when the lights are off and they're lying in the big, soft bed.
I mean, when you're offered the Virgin Priestess or whatever, I get that. But you could have... Well, the son definitely seemed, interested in you.
John wants to say, because I'm getting too damn old for meaningless sex. Wants to say, because being around you makes me fucking crazy. Wants to say, because he wasn't you. He pinches the bridge of his nose, looks up into the darkness.
You really think there wouldn't have been strings attached?
Ah, Rodney says, point taken.
Fabric rustles as he turns over, silk brocade brushing over skin. And John's not picturing Rodney laid out underneath him on this bed. He's not. He's lying still and breathing regularly so that he can credibly pretend he's asleep when Rodney sighs, voice a whisper into the quiet, and breathes out. I wish it wasn't so hard for you.
7. The fact that Rodney appears, as much as he ever seems with anyone, to genuinely care for John is something that doesn't really stop messing with John's head. It's hard to tell yourself the feelings you've got for the guy who frequently puts himself on the line to save your life are just a frivolous crush, or it's at least hard to do that when said crush endures through the development of the closest friendship either of them's ever had, interspersed with the non-infrequent life-saving and moments of mortal terror. Mostly, John can deal with it, because he's been compartmentalising this shit for, essentially, his entire adult life. But sometimes it just claws its way up through all his defences, drags the truth right out of his throat. Rodney's in the infirmary after an accident at an ancient outpost where, in John's opinion, he'd taken an unnecessary risk, throwing himself bodily at John to shove him out of the way of some kind of defensive energy beam, only to leave himself right in the thing's line of fire. There'd been the smell of burning flesh, Rodney howling with pain before going limp over John's back, John's heart pounding with fear and adrenaline as he shouted into his radio, then hands on him, Taylor dragging him backward, while Ronan threw Rodney over his shoulder and ran for the gate. John's been assured that it's better than it looks, but it looks fucking bad, and he can't make himself leave the chair at Rodney's bedside. Can't stop thinking that it should have been him in the path of that thing.
You can't do that to me, he says, voice quiet and wrung out.
next time, if...
You've got to let it be me, all right?
John usually rations out touches at times like this, but maybe he's getting weaker because he's been holding Rodney's unresisting hand for the past hour and a half. That's why he notices immediately when Rodney starts to stir, his fingers twitching against John's palm. John's heart jumps into his throat, his head snapping up to watch Rodney blinking into consciousness. John? John pulls his hand back, schooling his face into something more friendly infirmary visit than grief-soaked bedside vigil. Hey, buddy. Rodney blinks again, expression clouded over with exhaustion. How long have you been here? John really should lie, should say he just got here, was just passing through. But Rodney looks so lost, so vulnerable, and the truth comes out before John can swallow it back. Since he got out of the surgery. Rodney smiles, painkiller dopey, and flexes his fingers, almost like he's reaching for John's hand. Thought so. 6. They keep playing their little which one game, John answering honestly every single time, and Rodney, for his part, seeming to give each dichotomy serious thought before announcing his own choice, even though John's never asked, wouldn't expect him to have an opinion, much less express it. John finally says something when the question of Paul Newman versus Robert Redford sends Rodney into a 5-minute recounting of each option's pros and cons. It's okay, you know, John says. I know you don't want either of them. You don't have to pick. What? Rodney sounds vaguely annoyed and somewhat baffled, interrupted in a detailed comparison of the actors' respective filmographies. I'm having trouble choosing because they're both... The statement ends with a hand gesture John thinks means either the total package or five armed hostiles across the ridge. Considering they're sitting in Rodney's quarters, it's probably the former. So you'd... John says, wary. He'd thought all of this was more a lesser of two evils thing for Rodney, not... Yes, obviously. Rodney's looking at John like he's an idiot. Most men are. Well, the less said the better, your bad taste notwithstanding. But there are clearly certain specimens who even a straight man has to agree. He cocks his head, regarding John thoughtfully. I mean, surely you've been with, you know, nominally straight men, haven't you? John says, too blindsided by the question to consider the underlying logic behind it. Yes, yeah, some. Exactly, Rodney says, nodding, hypothesis confirmed. So as I was saying, Paul Newman... And, well, John sort of tunes out of Rodney's explanation of his personally developed male attractiveness matrix, because he's a bit busy processing the realisation that this is maybe a lot less hypothetical than he'd thought. 5. That Rodney apparently thinks it's normal for straight guys to devote significant and careful thought to the men they'd plausibly have sex with is a piece of information that rattles around John's head, impossible to ignore, like a loose tooth he can't stop passing his tongue over. Rodney doesn't act any differently, though, doesn't seem to realise he'd upended John's world with that statement. Typical McKay, John thinks. Just expects you to get on his level or get out of his way. John's too far gone to even think about trying to get out of Rodney's way, so he drags himself forcibly through the confusion and puts on a pretty damn passable performance of on his level. They're sitting out on the pier the next time Rodney asks him something, the city glowing and restful behind them, two beers each warming them through. So, you told me before you always knew... Rodney starts, and John remembers that conversation, but it was something like 2 years ago, so he's kind of surprised that Rodney does too. When you say always, was it like, really, always? John wets his lips, tries to figure out how to explain this. I mean, yeah, he says, because he did always know, as soon as he knew there was something to know. So, you know I love football. Oh my God, is that why you like football? Rodney interrupts, gleeful. No, John says too quickly. His ears feel hot.
He's never talked about this with anyone before. I mean, it's not the only reason. It's not even the main reason, but...
John winces, rubs at the back of his neck.
It took a little while, you know, before I realised the other guys weren't watching quite the same way I was.
Right, Rodney says, no longer teasing. He's using the tone that means he's synthesising some information, slotting it into one of his mental categories. Having that attention applied to him makes John feel a little shivery in a familiar way that tells him it's time to slow down on the beers.
He watches Rodney's profile for a little while, wondering if another question's coming, but Rodney just tilts his head a bit, looking thoughtful, and then tips back the rest of his beer before launching into a complaint about the idiots in his lab.
4. John was right to brace himself for another question, but this one doesn't come until they've finished the beers and are trudging back down the length of the pier, a little unsteady on their feet. Rodney turns his head, studies John for a moment, and then says,
"Did you ever think about, well, not joining the military?"
He gestures clumsily into the still night air.
"It's just, back when you would have joined, it wasn't even, I mean, there were investigations."
John snorts. "What do you do, Rodney? Read a book about it?"
It's oddly endearing to imagine Rodney doing research to understand John's life, but he shakes his head, banishes the thought in favour of watching Rodney shrug, redness staining the back of his neck.
"I'm a well-informed man of the world, I'll have you know," he mutters, and John grins. "Seriously, though, did you?"
Not really," John says, wishing it were easier to keep the truth behind his teeth. He's gotten too used to being honest with Rodney. "First time I had sex with a guy, I reconsidered for a few weeks."
Rodney shakes his head, angry on John's behalf, and John can't say he isn't learning to kind of like how that feels.
"Hell of a choice to force a person into."
And it is, it really fucking is. But John spent most of his life hiding, so it always seemed like something he could do, something he could live with.
He looks up at the spires of Atlantis, the lights that come on from the touch of his hands, the city, the people he'd give anything to protect. Looks sidelong at Rodney, his cheeks pink from their shared six-pack, broad shoulders at a relaxed slant as he walks. John shrugs.
"Yeah, it was worth it, though."
3. One evening, after yet another near-death experience, Rodney comes into John's room, looking morose, and asks,
"Have you ever been in love?"
John chokes on absolutely nothing, which Rodney ignores, sighing and throwing himself down on the end of John's bed.
"It's just, you know, with the whole almost dying thing today, I was thinking, God, what if I die without ever being with someone I love?"
"Not all it's cracked up to be," John says, thinking of blood and sand under his fingernails. His throat feels dry.
Not in this line of work."
John hadn't nearly died today, but he'd had a front row seat to Rodney's near miss, which is so, so goddamn much worse, John knows from experience.
"Oh," Rodney says, twisting to look at him, his eyes big and blue, "so you, and it didn't end well, I guess?"
John slides on his most sardonic, flippant smile.
"How do you think I ended up flying helicopters in Antarctica, Rodney?"
That's not really an answer, but John also knows Rodney's seen his file and is smart enough to put two and two together.
"Jesus," Rodney breathes in a rush of air, like he's been punched in the stomach.
"Yeah, Rodney's put it together."
I'm sorry."
John shrugs.
"It's fine."
"And it is fine."
"Well, it's sort of fine."
"It's as fine as John's ever going to get, at least, but it's also not really fine, because John told himself it wouldn't happen again, and here it is, in his room, sitting at the end of his bed, happening again. But there's nothing Rodney can do about that. Rodney doesn't need to know any of that." Rodney's looking at him like he knows it isn't fine, or like he's going to ask John if there's been anybody since. And John can't have that, so he forces himself into motion, claps a hand on Rodney's shoulder.
Come on, he says. I heard the meth has chocolate cake. That'll make you feel better. 2. So, Rodney asks, seemingly out of nowhere, when they're sitting in the jumper, waiting for Ronan and Taylor to circle back around after some recon. How do you even know if another guy's, you know, interested? John cocks an eyebrow, puts on the tone that's kept him on thin ice with every CO he's ever had, and says, Why, Rodney? You picking up signals from someone? Rodney huffs, turning to study the view out the window. The back of his neck is red, but they walked for 3 hours in the sun today, so that's not really a surprise. I'm just curious about the mechanics, Rodney shrugs, frowns out at the scenery like it's personally offended him. It seems very different from, well, what I know is all. Well, yeah, John says. I mean, you know, I'm not the most representative sample here, but... Rodney scoffs. Please, you sound like a sociologist. He waves a hand, dismissing an entire field with casual confidence. I'm asking about you, not doing an ethnography or something. Okay, John says. Well, when you're in my position, you kind of have to get used to things being a little, you know, under the radar. But what does that mean? Rodney presses. I mean, how do you know? How can you tell if a guy wants to be your friend or if he wants, you know, to be more than friends? Rodney's voice sounds oddly strained and urgent, like this is really bothering him. But it's not like John's trying to be obtuse, it's just... It's hard to explain, he hedges, wincing. There's a certain way a guy'll look at you, and you just... You kind of get used to watching for it. Rodney grumbles. I thought there might be some kind of secret signal, a system of Morse code blinks or something. You can do a lot with knocks in a certain kind of bathroom stall, John offers, watching Rodney's eyes widen slightly. He's less easy to shock by now, but John likes the way his cheeks still turn pink when he puts together the implications of the little jokes John makes. Right, Rodney says, his eyes narrowing again and his gaze sweeping over John, slouched in the pilot's chair. Well, that was even less informative than usual. Honestly? John shifts, feeling prickly and confused, and maybe a little annoyed. You figure it out, and you figure it out quick because you have to. Because if you say the wrong thing to the wrong guy, you might get socked in the face, or worse, Rodney finishes, dead serious. And the fight goes out of John in one long sigh. Yeah, John says, low and hoarse, the remnants of old fears shaken loose, unmoored and racing through his nerves. Or worse. Now see, Rodney begins, like he's winding up for a lecture. I've always found the rules and customs around dating to be frankly arcane, so I suppose I shouldn't be surprised. And so John breathes and listens, and is thankful that Rodney is an expert on filling silences. 1. John's in Rodney's quarters for a movie night. After a few days of uncharacteristic quiet, they decided they could afford to do a Star Wars trilogy rewatch. The Empire Strikes Back has just ended, the triumphant, sweeping music of the credits pouring out of Rodney's laptop speakers. There's an empty bowl of popcorn down by their feet, and they've sprawled on Rodney's bed, both of them in sweats and T-shirts. There's a comfort to it all, something soft and quiet, that makes John a little bit maudlin, makes him remember the first time he and Rodney had watched all three of these movies back to back. You know, when I told you I was gay, I thought we'd never be in contact with Earth again, John says, rolling onto his side. Rodney laughs through his nose. Thanks for the vote of confidence, Colonel. John rolls his eyes. Well, come on. I didn't know how you were going to react. And it's not like I usually tell anyone, you know. Rodney's eyebrows knit together and he rolls over too, studying John's face in the light of the laptop. Just me. I think Taylor and Ronan know, John shrugs. But yeah, Rodney, just you. Rodney's watching him so carefully, his eyes flicking quickly over John's face, but he can feel every time how Rodney's gaze snags just for a second at his mouth. John's heart starts to pick up, and he licks his bottom lip, reflexive. Rodney breathes in quick and sharp. John's not sure what's happening. "Rodney," John says, voice just above a murmur. Rodney rolls onto his back, staring up at the ceiling as he talks. "I've been thinking for a while now, I suppose, about signals and about knowing certain things about oneself and how late might be too late and about what constitutes a normal level of interest and..." He cuts himself off, turns again and looks John dead in the eyes, pinning him with all that endless blue. "I just... God, I've been working myself up to this for weeks. I..." Rodney closes his eyes for the space of two breaths, and they're close enough that John can feel the force of each exhale moving the air between them. Rodney blinks his eyes open, searches John's face for a moment before he speaks again. "Can I kiss you?" John opens his mouth, knowing he should tell Rodney no. Tell Rodney he should have gotten his experimentation out in college like every other straight guy. But he's still looking right at John, terrified and sincere. And so John takes a breath, closes his mouth and nods. It's tentative, Rodney's mouth soft and curved against his. But Rodney reaches out after a second, curling his hand around the back of John's neck, thumb stroking the hinge of his jaw. And John opens for him like a flower unfurling towards the sun, searching and easy and completely inexorable. John reaches up, puts his hand on Rodney's forearm just to feel it, just to prove to himself it's really happening, and Rodney's tongue slides ticklish over his lower lip before they break apart, still breathing each other's air. "Does that answer your question?" John whispers, something giddy bubbling up inside him at the way Rodney's looking at him, the firm softness of Rodney's hand anchored at his throat. That answers pretty much all my questions," Rodney says. And then he grins, the blinding, wide-open way he does when he's found something, figured something out, made something work for him. And John's helpless against that look, always has been. So he tugs Rodney closer with the hand on his arm, wondering what other questions he can give Rodney the answers to. The end.